walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And my guest today is Mark Reinfeld, a celebrated vegan chef and author of several cookbooks, and who is presenting a cooking demonstration at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest this Saturday at Cotonchobee, Fort Brooke Park. Reinfeld has racked up countless awards and honors, including winning Vegan.com's Recipe of the Year Award and being the recipient of a Platinum Carrot Award given to America's top, quote, innovative and trailblazing healthy chefs, end quote. The books he's written or co-written include Vegan World Fusion Cuisine and a series of cookbooks highlighting recipes that are simple enough to be made within a half an hour. The 30-Minute Vegan, over 175 quick, delicious, and healthy recipes for everyday cooking. The 30-Minute Vegan Soups On, more than 100 quick and easy recipes for every season, and so on. We'll discuss this, a new culinary academy he's launched in Miami, a short-term Skype consulting opportunity he's offering, the cooking demo he'll be presenting at VegFest this Saturday, and more. I'm going to speak with Mark Reinfeld in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also, later in the show, I'll speak briefly with Dr. Melanie Butera, the veterinarian and adoptive mom to Dilly the deer, the deer born blind, who lives with Butera and her husband. Dilly has her own room, and who's achieved worldwide fame through the Dilly Cam and media coverage of assorted stripes. Indeed, Butera was a guest on Talking Animals, discussing Dilly and the self-published book she wrote about Dilly and Butera's battle with cancer. That book was recently picked up by a major publishing house. Butera's expanded and updated, and it's out now. Also, if by any chance Bill Brown is listening, I'm thinking about you. Lastly, ripping up our normal format last week to make the callers the guest prompted me to neglect to mention that WNF is still a bit short of the goal we'd established for our fall fund drive. We really, really need you to help us cross the finish line here and end up with the financial resources that we require to keep this fabulous radio station operating in full swing. So please donate now to WMNF.org. If you donated before, why not donate again? Maybe you didn't have a chance, and all the more, this would be a great opportunity to help us at WMNF.org. Any donation of any kind would be much appreciated. Right now, let's speak to Chef Mark Reinfeld about vegan cooking, his books, Saturday's appearance at Tampa Bay Veg Fest, and more, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Mark Reinfeld to Talking Animals. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Duncan. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So I hope to discuss vegan cooking, cookbooks, new ventures of yours, the cooking demo at VegFest, and who knows what else. But I gather that a subtext of your work is not really preaching to the vegan converted so much as reaching omnivores about the virtues of a plant-based diet and how delicious that indeed can be. So with that in mind, over the years, what have you found is the biggest misconception people tend to have about vegan eating?
I found the biggest misconception generally is that people don't expect the food to taste good. That's in a nutshell, or not as good as what they're accustomed to. That's really where I see my role is. I love creating recipes that people can follow that turn out amazing, and showing them in my workshops and trainings how easy it is to create the food that has all the flavor that they're looking for.
What are some of the biggest challenges involved with that when folks first try their hand at creating vegan meals? For instance, how big of an issue is cheese or the lack of cheese for people?
That's a good question. That's usually I can't give up the cheese is usually a big hurdle, at least going from vegetarian to vegan. And when people ask me about the latest trends in the vegan world, the vegan cheese scene is definitely taking off. I like to say that no cheese will remain unconquered by the plant-based world. And you can make a lot of cheesy flavored dishes by using cashew cream, which is just blending soaked cashews and adding nutritional yeast, which is a popular ingredient that gives a nutty and cheesy flavor. And there's also a whole assortment now of new plant-based cheeses on the market, artisan vegan cheeses, and there's even a cheese shop, vegan cheese shop, opening in Portland. So there's lots of exciting news in the vegan cheese world.
So there are indeed a number of ways to surmount that that obstacle.
Yes, definitely.
What about your formative years of cooking? First of all, were you a chef who became a vegan chef or a vegan who became a chef?
My journey to vegetarian and vegan occurred simultaneously with my culinary career. So I used to love cooking as a child, and after a brief stay at law school where I decided that wasn't my path, I wound up moving to San Diego and started working in a kitchen, and I tapped into my love of cooking while I was becoming vegetarian. So my whole culinary career has pretty much been plant-based.
Wow, okay, so that's interesting. They're really on a over sort of interwoven path. What year was this? How far back are we talking about here, Mark?
This is the mid-90s.
Okay.
So it's been about 20 years of just diving into the plant-based culinary world.
Sure. And and since they did happen simultaneously, I'd be curious to know what prompted the exploration of initially vegetarian and then vegan eating for yourself?
Well, it's interesting because I was traveling. After college, I traveled for a year. I deferred admission in the law school, and I traveled through Europe and was in Berlin when the wall opened and went down to Israel and was on a kibbutz, and then was in India and Nepal and did the Mount Everest trek. So I went on this like epic adventure, and during that time I just started connecting with animals in a way that I hadn't before. I grew up in New York, so I never really saw like a baby cow and how close it resembles a dog, or how amazing baby lambs and goats and chickens are. So that prompted me to make the shift.
Gotcha. We sort of talked about what other people's challenges are maybe when they're first stepping into vegan cooking, and cheese obviously being one of those. What were your biggest challenges as you were learning to master that culinary world?
I think for me, it's really a process of trial and error, and a lot of it is, I found, is really psychological, that you have to see that there's going to be a learning curve, and I encourage people to be gentle with themselves and not beat themselves up if something doesn't turn out the way it should, and just to encourage people to know that if they know how they like the taste of food, they could eventually create that themselves. And there's really some simple tips and tricks that people can learn. And so really it's just persisting and trial and error, I think, that you eventually start to get the food tasting the way you want it to.
And how much have those kind of trial and errors that you probably experienced yourself shaped how you approach the courses that you teach and the cookbooks you're in? For example, to what extent was the 30-minute vegan series an outgrowth of realizing that for many, maybe even for you initially, or at some point, people think of vegan cooking as complicated or time-consuming or daunting even. And so
right.
It seems like you've addressed that sort of head-on.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me, just simplifying the process. And I like to show people really simple ways so that I meet people where they're at. And there's a way of looking at recipes, which I call like a template recipe format, where you could break a recipe down into its parts. And then by changing each part, you create a new recipe. So really simple little tips and tricks that people could absorb and then take and as their own.
Well, it's so great because no matter what your culinary leaning is, everybody's busy. So the idea that any kind of meal you can put together from start to finish in 30 minutes is a godsend. And and then obviously in this case, if that's also speaking to vegans or aspiring vegans, whatever, it's like, well, geez, why not? Why wouldn't you? It's
right. Yeah. For me, if I look at it, and if it's, you can show people how, I look at it as a form of activism. And for me, showing people how to prepare the food is my form of activism. And you might have heard that expression that if you give a person a piece of tofu, you could feed them for a day. But if you show them how to bake the tofu, you could feed them for a lifetime.
That does seem like a nice twist on a somewhat biblical thing I might have heard in the past. Yeah. So
So for me, it's that idea that if you can make the food taste good and you're not feeling like you're depriving yourself, if you can get the cost lower, the health benefits are there, the environmental benefits are there. It's just becomes a win-win all the way around. And for me, I think no matter how much you understand it intellectually that you should eat healthier, include more plants, until the food tastes good, it's not going to go very far. So that's really, I do teacher trainings and workshops where I empower people to make food that tastes good.
Yeah, well, that seems like your goal and the fundamental thing, because otherwise, as you say, nobody's going any further.
And
as you initially mentioned, the big misconception is that the food couldn't possibly be good if it is vegan. So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is award-winning vegan chef and author Mark Reinfeld, who will be presenting a cooking demonstration at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest this Saturday at Cotonchobe Fort Brooke Park. If you'd like to ask Mark a question or offer a comment about cooking, cookbooks, any ingredients, anything else, we welcome those at 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. This is kind of almost an extra ridiculous version of who's your favorite child question, but what are two or three, at least, of your favorite 30-minute dishes, since we're sort of at the moment at least focusing a little bit on the 30-minute vegan series? I mean, which of those, and I know there's countless that you've put in all these great cookbooks, but especially for people who again, are maybe just sort of venturing into this and not quite sure, what ones really seem like just faves of yours or just complete winners overall?
The one that I encourage people to do is what I like to call a monk bowl. And my business partner, Beau Rinaldi, and co-author of the first book, introduced me to that term. And what a monk bowl is it's a grain, a green, and a protein. And so by using that template recipe format I mentioned, you could say I'm having a monk bowl 3 days or 5 days this week, and they could be totally different. And the way you can look at it is look at it as a component. So one component is the grain component, and you can rotate through a selection of grains. So quinoa, any kind of rice pasta, buckwheat, barley, millet, couscous, whatever grains you like.
Yeah.
And then the green component is any selection of vegetables of your choosing. So I encourage people to have a rainbow of veggies, and those veggies could be raw, steamed, roasted, grilled, lightly sauteed, and just rotate through the veggies and the techniques. And then for the protein, I rotate through tempeh, tofu, and the legumes. So on top of that, personally, that's my nirvana in a bowl, my go-to meal, and I'll top it with some nutritional yeast, which gives vitamin B12 and the protein and a nutty and cheesy flavor, and then a little bit of tamari, which gives it a help flavor it. So you could go further and make sauces and dressings, but looking at the monk bowl as a go-to meal, I think it really is quite revolutionary, actually.
Sounds like you say, I mean, just the very nature, it's like three different wheels that you're spinning. Yeah, like you say, if you had that multiple times a week as you introduced, I mean, you would never have the same monk bowl if you just kind of keep spinning the wheel amongst those the greens and proteins. So it'd be like...
Yeah, I actually use that metaphor of the turning wheel.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, good.
Maybe you could assist in my next class then.
Well, if you want to scare all your attendees away, by all means, have me over. But so here's another thing kind of now that we're sort of talking about. I mean, the wheel and the grain-green protein sort of makes me wonder, if you had to choose, what are your top five ingredients for you to cook with, whether it's a 30-minute meal or a much more elaborate meal? I mean, what ingredients do you just feel like, okay, I got to have these five in any given meal that if it's really going to be my best work?
That's going into the favorite child realm, but I'll see if I can answer. It's like staples for me are the nutritional yeast is a big one. I really like that for the B12 and the protein. I like, as far as grains, quinoa is my go-to grain. Spices, I really like chipotle powder, which is smoked jalapeno.
Yeah.
And that gives like some heat and some smokiness. That it really goes a long way. Tamari, gluten-free tamari is another big one, and that's it's in the umami flavor profile, so it helps bring out the flavor of other ingredients. How many cool. is that so far?
Well, I think we're at 4 or 5, and that's that. No, that's great, because I'm going to get into a couple of email questions or responses. One is just from our own Joelle Shilke, who just, her subject line says, love this guest. She used to run a cool eatery and coffee house called The Globe, and it says we did a bunch of vegan cooking at The Globe, so she's really nice. Digging what you're saying. And so here's cool. a question from someone who, this might be really sort of hooked into some of what we've talked about already, about people not taking wanting to take the step into the vegan world. This is a little bit longer email, but I'm just going to read the whole thing just because it's a good personality to it. So it says, we've been vegetarian for years, striving for vegan, still use dairy butter and dairy cheese. I love food and I love to try new dishes, but I really dislike cooking. I'll rephrase, I hate cooking and I envy people who love it. I just paged through 3 of your books on Amazon. I'm ordering all 3 and I'm so impressed with your descriptions and how you immerse the reader into the culture and essence of the dishes and the ingredients. So my question is, will you marry me? I kid. Would you please talk about how you became so passionate about food and cooking? I'm seeking inspiration, and thank you for your love of animals.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. Well, I think it's a journey. We're all on the journey. Pretty much everyone knows when they like how food tastes. When food tastes good. And so I like to look at it as like some people describe it differently, but like a little bell goes off when you make something that tastes really good. And everyone has that capacity. And so for me, another theme is like the food is art metaphor. Mm-hmm. So nature provides this amazing palette of color and texture and flavor, and we can create these culinary masterpieces by just patiently and persistently doing our best, you know, trial and error.
Yeah.
And then every now and then you'll hit something that you'll be like, wow, that's amazing. And then you'll feed it to someone, and feeding people food that's good for them and tastes good is very satisfying. So I think it's just like any other creative endeavor. When art paints or sculptors make a sculpture, when they're in the groove and it comes out good, it kind of propels you to do it first.
And also it seems like, you know, just with your own story, you know, the law is lost. Was the culinary world's game, because obviously you had sort of set foot in law school and said, hey, you know what, this is not right for me. And then I don't know if you sort of tried a handful of other things first or just sort of wandered into cooking, but obviously that clicked immediately. And then it's like, okay, this is where I belong.
Yeah, I never thought I would wind up doing this as a career when I left law school. I didn't really know what my plan B was. Because I had done that travel journey, and I traveled my junior year in college. I studied in London and traveled like the American travel. Like if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium. Like I did a lot of traveling and just set a reference point of joy and freedom in my life. And then going to law school, I realized that reference point was not being met at all. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I needed to find something that brought me more of that.
Just back to our emailer's question. I mean, one of the things that's so great that we've already touched on, because I happen to know this emailer has a very busy actually looks after a bunch of animals, horses specifically, herself.
Oh, nice.
So I'm sure that one of the things that's probably going to really appeal to her, and probably already did in terms of ordering the books, is the 30-minute vegan series. Again, if you're swamped and you just, again, really put together a great, delicious meal in 30 minutes, again, that's really the solution to so many people's challenges of doing any kind of cooking, much less if they're trying to step all the way into vegan cooking.
Yeah, here's another little tip is that, because I'm asked, you know, how do I get started or what are some big tips? And I like using spices and the ethnic spice blends. So you can really create like 4 to 6 different spice blends. The books have recipes for that. So you can have a Mexican blend, Italian, Ethiopian, Moroccan, and there's no end to the French with the Herbe de Provence. And once you have those spice blends, that monk bowl could then turn into, one day you could have a Mexican bowl, an Indian bowl, Ethiopian bowl, Moroccan bowl. So that's the idea with vegan fusion, is incorporating on the food level, it's incorporating the culinary traditions from around the world and being able to access all these amazing flavors. And that's another misconception. When people go vegan, they think they're actually limiting the types of foods that they could have. I can't have this, that, or this. And actually what happens is you wind up going out of your comfort zone and exploring more. So that's when you could really tap into the world cuisine.
You just have to be open to sort of reprogramming yourself a little bit, and especially in that that transitional phase where it's a meal. Hey, I grew up and a meal looks like this, and this is what's on my plate. Yeah. But one of the many great things too about the 30-minute vegan series is that you'll lay it out, and it will be a 30-minute meal, but then there'll be either tips for substitutions or things that, like, hey, if you do have a little more time, you can do this or add this or, you know, swing into this element. But again, the core, obviously, of all those books is, hey, these are meals you can, you know, from start to on your table, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So let's...
Quick and easy.
Yeah. Well, that's who's not those interested in that these days? Yeah. On a sort of an offshoot note, I know the Blossoming Lotus has been closed for a number of years, but do you want to take a moment just to describe that restaurant and the heights that it did reach?
Sure. Well, it's interesting because when I was working in that health food store, it was in San Diego. After a few years, I branched off and formed a consulting service called the Blossoming Lotus, and that was in 1998 in Malibu, California. And then I started doing consulting and corporate accounts in New York City and Aspen. And then I went to Kauai, Hawaii for a 2-week vacation and wound up staying for about 8 years. So it could be the longest recorded 2-week vacation in history. I didn't actually leave the island for over 2 years. And during that time, we formed a restaurant called the Blossoming Lotus. And the original location was open with 30 seats, and then we moved into another space that had about 80 plus seats, and we turned the original location into a juice bar and bakery. The bigger location, we had like over 200 people at our grand opening with vegan luau's and Polynesian drummers and dancing, and we had a stage for nightly entertainment. And at one point, we actually won the Best Restaurant on Kauai Award, which was unique because it wasn't Best Vegetarian Restaurant. It was going with all the other luxury resorts and well-known restaurants. So that was probably the peak. And then my business partner, Beau Rinaldi, actually opened the Blossoming Lotus in Portland, Oregon around the same time. And that has been recently sold, but the Blossoming Lotus is still open in Portland.
Okay. I get over to Kauai now and again, and it was too big of a gap, I guess, to actually catch the Blossoming Lotus when it was open there. Why, with all those cool things and expanding and all those people there at the opening night, I mean, why do you think it just didn't sustain over time?
Well, it was a small island economy.
Yeah.
And the restaurant was like something that you would find in Los Angeles and New York. Mm-hmm. So we were the tourist fluctuations were very extreme.
Yeah.
And there was a year when there was flooding for about 40 days. Everyone knows the restaurant business is very challenging. I like to say I do these trainings internationally, so I have people who come for various reasons and some want to open a restaurant, and I say the first step is a psychological evaluation. And if you fail the psychological evaluation, then you can proceed to go and open the restaurant.
You're right so for the gig, yeah.
Right. It's very challenging, and two of the airlines that serve the island shut down within months, so there was just a big dip, and we decided it was just, the economy there wasn't supporting the size of what we were offering.
I see. All right. Well, that's a shame, but yeah, and I remember, in fact, this goes back, I think, about 10 years, but you guys did a cookbook sort of based on some of those recipes, if I'm not mistaken, because I think
the Vegan Fusion World Cuisine, and that of Jane Goodall and Martin Gray, Sacred Site photographer. That's like our landmark book.
Yeah, and back in that day when it was first out, I actually spoke with Bo about it. So I'm happy to speak to you finally to get caught up on that.
Awesome. But great. I did help with a restaurant here in Miami Beach called Full Bloom with their menu. So it's interesting. It went from the Blossoming Lotus to Full Bloom.
Okay, well, it all seems linguistically consistent. Then that's great. Again, this is Talking Animals at Duncan's Restaurant. Speaking with vegan chef and author Mark Reinfeld, who will be presenting a cooking demonstration at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest this Saturday at Cotonchobee Fort Brook Park. I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, Mark, let's talk a little bit about the cooking demo at the Veg Fest this Saturday. So, can you give us a bit of a sneak preview, or do you want to hold the suspense for those who turn up on Saturday?
Sure, yeah. It's well, I'm planning to do a raw granola and with and a plant-based milk, and then using that template recipe format. So it seems like I'll just be doing two recipes, but I'm actually going to show, using that template recipe format, there'll be at least like 947 recipes, maybe 948 through the using that template format.
And will you also show the formula that establishes that there is 947 or possibly 948 recipes that you can derive from these?
That's the extra credit homework.
Okay, that only comes at the end of the presentation. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That sounds sounds really great. And again, that's the idea that seems to be kind of a running theme of your work and even our conversation here is variations of meals and ingredients and swapping things in and out, and suddenly you have not only a few different versions of a monk bowl, but you've got 948 dishes that came from the raw granola and the,
right,
and the plant-based milk. So that's fantastic. So you alluded to being in Miami, helping open a restaurant there, and I think I understand that you launched a new venture there. Maybe you could describe for a moment or two the Vegan Fusion Culinary Academy there.
Thank you, Duncan. So I've been traveling. Once the restaurant closed in 2008, I've spent the last several years traveling internationally, offering 5 and 10 day trainings. I do a teacher training. I've worked with chefs from like the Cordon Bleu and major food service accounts. So I've been specializing in chef training and working with people even who just pick up a knife for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm here in Miami, I'm starting to do more events in Florida. I have a weekend workshop actually in Orlando the week after the Tampa Fest. And now in Miami, I've established the Vegan Fusion Culinary Academy. And I've partnered with this woman, Lynn Kitchen, to offer other like lifestyle components. Like
sorry to interrupt, Mark, but I'm sorry. Did you say the partner in the culinary thing, her last name is Kitchen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, is that funny?
I just didn't think that should go by unremarked on entirely, but okay, please proceed.
It's just nothing is, yeah, it's all meant to be. And
yeah.
So we're starting it this year as a pop-up. So I have events scheduled in December, February, April, and June of this year in Miami, where I'm doing 5 day training, 2 day workshops, 1 day training, and teacher trainings. And Vegan Fusion Academy is the site for that.
Oh, okay. Because I had it as veganfusion.com, but this is kind of an offshoot of that.
Well, the main site is veganfusion.com.
Okay.
And
there's
a link to the academy.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Everything is available on veganfusion.com.
Okay, cool. That's where we want to send folks who want to find out more or find out about your books or the academy, et cetera. So it's veganfusion.com. So one thing in that, at least in the initial offering at the Culinary Academy that really caught my eye was sort of a continuing medical education class that's accredited for doctors, nurses, and medical students. And I just thought, wow, I mean, I can't tell you how many doctors I've spoken to on this show and just informally elsewhere who have really indicated that in med school, they just receive little or no education about nutrition, the impact food and diet has on health and well-being. So, I mean, I think this is fantastic. What are the hallmarks of that course that you're offering?
Well, right now, I offered a program like that in Portland, CME training, where there was a lecture by a doctor for a few hours, and then we went into the kitchen and we prepared recipes together.
Yeah.
So the program will be based on that format, and I'm actually in dialogue with people in Boca about helping to get a culinary medicine program going there. So it'll be working in conjunction with them to craft that program.
Oh, that's great.
Part of the longer term part of the.
Because again, not to repeat myself, just to seem so striking, and really to some of those doctors themselves, which is how these conversations have come up, that, you know, part of even now, I think, in at least a lot of med school curriculums, that's, you know, nutrition or how to eat and how that does affect people's bodies and health. I mean, that's just not part of it, typically.
Yeah. To me, that's where the food revolution is occurring, just the awareness that, like, food and health are connected. Like, if the medical community really fully grasped that, we would take a huge leap forward. Like, 20 years ago, if you told the doctor, you know, I think what I'm eating has something to do with how I'm feeling, they wouldn't think anything of it. And now there's at least more of that awareness. And for me, if you take that to its conclusion, you'll see like the new, my latest book, which will be out in the spring, is Healing the Vegan Way. And where I've worked with some of the leading MDs in the plant-based world will be contributing. And there's 200 recipes that really show like the plants have all that we need to heal us and help us thrive.
Oh, that's so great because, just as an extension of sort of what we're talking about here, I mean, one of the things that's just so striking, too, is that often if someone gets a particular diagnosis, certain kind of cancers or other things, one of the things, depending on, what kind of oncologist they have or whatever, is change your diet, go right to a plant-based diet.
Yeah.
So this is kind of obviously like a preemptive thing, which of course is far better if doctors and other medical professionals are emphasizing that early on and trying to keep their patients from getting that diagnosis based on how they are eating and other kind of nutritional guidelines. So
you probably know the Hippocrates quote of letting food be your medicine. So to me, it goes, that leads us back to the plants.
Yeah.
And that I like to show, how they used to have the doctor advertisements of doctors recommending cigarettes, and they'll, you could Google it and see pages of doctors and dentists touting their favorite brand of cigarettes. And to me, that's the way of the meat and dairy industry. All of the meat and dairy commercials that we see now will be looked at the same way that those cigarette commercials are looked at.
Yeah. What an oddity. What a curiosity. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mark, we're just sort of in the last moment or two of our time together here, but also I thought one thing that I thought was also really interesting and sort of distinctive that I think you do, or at least have done, and maybe you do it on a limited basis still now, but this sort of one-on-one Skype consulting, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It was another way of just reaching out to people, and some people like the one-on-one attention, and so it's a way for people. My wife's actually a naturopathic doctor, and so I'll have to decline the wedding proposal from earlier.
Okay.
But, she's an ND, and so we actually have a website called doctorandchef.com.
Oh.
And we'll work with people to help give them naturopathic recommendations and food suggestions, and I provide recipes. But the Skype part is really for people who want to help with recipe development or menu development or even cookbook writing. I've been, I guess, since 2004, I've been writing cookbooks, so I could help people, introduce them to my literary agent and work with them on proposals. And so it's a full service idea of just working one-on-one with
people. But it sounds like it's kind of geared for people who are professionals. Either they're chefs at this point, and or they're interested in writing a cookbook, but sort of needing some guidance from you. So rather than someone like just trying to get the hang of, getting comfortable with some vegan cooking, that would be probably less likely, I would think, than people who are sort of a little further along in their...
I would do a one-on-one. You could do, I've done before, like cooking classes over Skype also.
Okay.
So technology is pretty amazing with how we can reach out to the global community.
For sure. Cool. Well, again, for all that information and to find out more about the books and the academy, et cetera, go to veganfusion.com. Again, we've been speaking with Mark Reinfeld, and he will be in Tampa this Saturday at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest doing a cooking demonstration that he described, and that's, I think, scheduled to be at 12:30 p.m. So Mark,
see you there, Duncan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, awesome. Oh, good.
Yeah, well, you said I could assist with your next presentation, so I'll be the guy sort of saying all the wrong things at the wrong time. But
you could do the knife juggling portion.
Okay, excellent. That'll keep me quiet. Yeah. So, okay, Mark, well, thanks so much for making
great
time to join us. Okay. We'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Duncan.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
In a few moments, we'll speak briefly with Dr. Melanie Butera about the new edition of her book chronicling Dilly the deer born blind who lives with Butera. And again, Dilly has her own room and has become an internet star via the Dilly Cam. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. 2 weeks ago, Sebastian Maniscalco made his Talking Animals debut with part of a wonderful piece about the way he and his wife were bedeviled by a number of raccoons in their yard. Today, we'll hear part two of that piece. We'll pick up the story where they've just placed humane traps out for the raccoons. It's Sebastian Maniscalco in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
But I don't know if you people have ever had like a trap in your yard, but it brings an excitement to the house. Every few hours, me and my wife were going to the window. We catch anything out there? One morning, we caught a squirrel. The guy told me this would happen. A squirrel could get in there. He's like, if it does, just let it go. So I went to go take the squirrel out, right? Something was wrong with the squirrel. I don't know what was going on. Foaming at the mouth. And I go, I'm not letting this out. My luck, I let it out. This thing's all over me. I'm not fighting a squirrel on a Tuesday morning at 7:30. So I give my wife a 20. And I tell her, go across the street. There's a Mexican gardener across the street. Mexicans, they're not as scared of anything. They'll come over with their bare hands, get it out, and throw it down the sidewalk. So 10 minutes goes by. She calls me from the driveway. She's got three Mexican gardeners with her. I call her, come here. I said, the whole reason for you to go do this was to act like you were home alone and you didn't want to let the squirrel out. Now I got to look three grown men in the eye. The squirrel's back here. We're kind of scared. It's foaming at the mouth. Could you do it? You guys have been great. Happy holidays.
That was Sebastian Maniscalco with the second part of a piece I'm calling Raccoons, taken from an appearance on Conan. Let's move now into our brief chat with Dr. Melanie Butera about Dilly the Deer and the new version of the book about that world-famous deer. Let's welcome back right now Dr. Melanie Butera to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Butera.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thank you.
First of all, I guess we have to start off by asking, how is Dilly?
Dilly is doing great. She's more famous than ever.
Yeah.
Just as happy as she ever was.
For sure. And it seems like kind of a little fancier or slightly more high-tech version of the Dilly Cam is in place since we last spoke.
Yes, I did. I found the technology is getting better and better, so we did get a better cam.
So fill us in on, since we did last speak, because at that point, one of the kind of chief things we were discussing was the self-published book that's chronicled Dilly and how you guys came to have this blind deer that was rejected by her mother and then now ended up not only living in your house but having her own room, which I still love. So some things have happened since then. Maybe you could fill us in a little bit.
Well, my self-published book was caught the attention of a New York agent, a literary agent, and he contacted me and was thrilled about the project and took it on and started pitching it to publishers. And it was picked up by a professional publisher called Regan Art.
And that's Judith Regan, I assume, right?
Yes.
Yeah, wow. She's a pretty legendary or at least notorious figure in the publishing world, so that's very cool.
Yeah, I've heard both sides of that story.
Yeah, yeah.
But the editor that they assigned to it is a very sweet lady and an animal lover and was a Dilly Cam fan, and she really took on the project with a lot of enthusiasm. She had me expand the book to include some stories from work and also about my journey through the cancer battle to try to give it a more 3D, type of book. And I think it really enhanced the story.
Did you leave everything intact from the self-published but just add to it, or did you move some things out of the current edition to make room for these things that she had suggested?
Yeah, a little bit of both of that.
Yeah.
They had me change the perspective of the self-published book to first person, which definitely is more suited.
Yeah.
They added in quite a bit from work and my life, which I never really wanted to be writing about me, but they did that. But they kept most of the self-published book in there. It may not all be in the same chapter it was in before, but most of it is still in there.
I think it just came out officially. Now, will you be doing any kind of appearances or sort of book tour dates, or how does that work?
Yes, I'm already starting to do some local events and local signings, and we actually have a book nibbling at our house tomorrow where people are going to bring their books, and Dilly herself is going to nibble the pages.
Well, I'm sure that's fairly singular in the publishing world to have the book nibbling. Yeah, that's great.
So.
Yeah.
And then eventually, as hopefully my schedule clears up a little bit, we'll be doing hopefully some national events. Of course, the publisher wants as much national attention as possible. But
sure.
I definitely have different places where many of her fans are from that have been so instrumental in all this that I want to try to appear in their local Barnes & Nobles or whichever bookstores are there.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Butera, the title changed a little bit. What is the title of the new spanking new book?
Right. The original title was Love on Hooves, Dilly the Deer, Love on Hooves.
Yeah.
And they changed it to just Dilly the Deer, and with the kind of a tag on it, a true story of love, family, and healing.
Right, which it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is a true story.
Yeah. How are you doing these days?
Well, I'm back in chemo. Last time I spoke to you, I was in remission. But
yeah.
That didn't last very long.
Oh, geez. I'm very sorry. Ugh.
But it's not stage four anymore. It's all I have left are some remnants of some of the original masses that just kind of regrew.
I see.
But I've had 18 more chemos. I've had a total of 28 chemos, and I look like Uncle Fester.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm not real pretty.
Yeah.
But I'm a Timex, not a Rolex. I'm still ticking away.
Right. And it sounds like your doctors feel like that chemo can knock down those things that do remain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm hoping. I've got scans coming up in about 2 weeks, and that's going to let me know if I'm done for a while or not. So
yeah. And meanwhile, again, Dilly is doing great, and I've been trying to spend more time again recently on the Dilly cam. And I was saying to our host of the morning music show earlier today that, to me, and I'm sure a lot of people feel this way, it's a hardly original thought, I'm sure, but if you've had any kind of really stressful day or bad day for whatever reason, and you just tune in and go online to the Dilly cam and just see Dilly hanging out or maybe having a little pasta or whatever she might be doing, I mean, that is like an instant cure.
Yeah. A lot of people say that. There's definitely something calming about her.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. No, she's it's just so sweet. And
she is a loving creature.
Yeah.
And we've been doing Periscope lately with her. We just kind of discovered that last week or so, and we've been doing some Periscope.
Oh, cool.
That's been fun.
Neat.
That's brought in people that all over the world that didn't even know about her before.
So yeah.
Kind of like starting all over again.
Right. Well, I guess we should make a point of mentioning that the website, Dilly, of course, has her own website. It's Dilly, D-I-L-L-I-E, deer.com. And so that has various buttons or sections on it, but including where you can tap right into to the Dilly cam. So great. Well, Dr. Butera, thank you so much for making the time to join us. And again, the book now is available pretty much anywhere where you get your books, since it's now in the hands of a major publisher. So
yes.
Good for you, and we'll wish you continued better and good health. And thanks again for joining us on Talking
Animals.
Thank
you so much.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Loroy and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt right now. It's time for some animal news and announcements. The first announcement isn't really animal-oriented, but it's very much WMNF-oriented. I want to remind you that on Tuesday, November 10th, a week from last night, WMNF will be presenting a lecture by economist Richard Wolff, and that's at the Palladium. That's at 7:30 p.m., and that's in St. Petersburg. Again, Wolff is the host, of course, of Economic Update Tuesday mornings at 10 a.m. right here on WMNF. He's a professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he taught economics from 1973 to 2008. So, you know, from listening to the show, and if you haven't had a chance to listen to the show, he's makes things very clear, very sort of otherwise complicated economic issues, very clear, very engaging. So, again, you can find out more or get your tickets at mypalladium.com. And you can find out more information about that if you'd like to call here at the station, 813-238-8001, or go to WMNF.org. And again, that's effectively a benefit for WMNF. So if you come out, and that helps the station and gives you a great evening of really a great lecture with Dr. Wolff. Let's see what else is coming up this weekend, November 7th, Saturday. There's a sunset stroll at Largo Central Park, and sort of put on by Suncoast Hospice. And the idea is to comfort your heart and soul with special activities, including a sunset luminary release, bereavement support for adults, children, and veterans, a memory wall, and specialized support for those who have lost beloved pets. So you can find out more by contacting Suncoast Hospice, and it does help raise money for Empath Health and its members who need those kinds of services. Also coming up, Pinellas County Animal Services is honoring veterans by, as you know probably by now, we can't really talk about the prices of things, but let's just say they're greatly, greatly reducing the cat and dog adoption fees for veterans and military service members at an upcoming adoption event that will be held on Monday at the Zachary L. Shannon Memorial, WFW Post. That's at 360 Douglas Avenue in Dunedin. That's going to begin Monday, November 9th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And you can find out more about that by going to pinellascounty.org/animal services. Also coming up on November 14th, Saturday, November 14th, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay will be providing from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Again, greatly reduced, shall we say, vaccinations and microchips to the first 1,000 dogs who arrive at the event at River Hills Church of God in Tampa. That's at 631 Sly Avenue. There are some criteria about that, so you might want to contact humanesociety.org before you head out there and find out if your dog would qualify. Also coming up on November 21st is Petacopia. That's a holiday adoption event at two different locations at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, speaking of which, at 3607 North Armenia, and also at Yuengling Brewery in Ybor City. So you can find out more by going to TampaCatCrusaders.org/Petacopia, and also looking just a little bit further down the road. Again, Florida Voices for Animals will host Tampa Bay's 10th annual Thanks Vegan Feast, delicious potluck style harvest feast, open to all Thanksgiving Day from 1:30 to 4:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa in Temple Terrace. So you can figure out dishes to share and how it works, and to find out more information, go to thanksvegan.com, or you can simply email thanksvegan@gmail.com and get the scoop. So I think that gets us caught up for now on the really immediate news and announcements in the Talking Animals world and animal world as well. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from us in the last 90 days. And there'll be a prize, a Talk Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Dig a pony. Well, you can celebrate anything you want. Yes, you can celebrate anything you want.
We may take our guesses off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laurie is up next. We've got amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, November 11th, and my guest will be Richard Kudo, founder and lead investigator of Animal Recovery Mission, or ARM, the organization that made international news recently by leading what's been called the largest tactical strike on extreme animal cruelty operations in U.S. history. The busts at three illegal farms in Loxahatchee in particular that were running slaughter operations and all kinds of awful things. I hope you'll join me for that. I also hope if you're coming out to VegFest this Saturday, come see us. We'll have a WMNF/Talking Animals table, and come by and say hi. We look forward to seeing you then. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. I hope to see some of you at least on Saturday at VegFest. Thanks.